Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hub Arkish.
I like this kind of party.
The Score senior football expert.
Once you put all the evidence that we have together, that's the bottom line.
Pro Football Weekly, Shaw Media, and Westwood One.
It goes deep. Hub does too.
Analyzing the Bears and the NFL.
This was an ongoing conversation at Hallis Hall for literally a couple months.
Hub Arkish with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats playoff hockey in Chicago. Catch your Central Division champion, Chicago Wolves, as they battle Grand Rapids in the first round tonight and Saturday at 7 at Allstate Arena. For playoff information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Hub Arkish can be found on Twitter at Hub_Arkish. He of The Score and Pro Football Weekly, who joins us now with the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Hello, Hub. How you doing?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good. I'm noticing, too, as the schedule has come out and we have these, as the NFL has created yet another holiday and it's schedule release time, Bears are America's damn team. You know, I don't want to hear anything from them this year about the doubters or the disbelievers or we're proving everybody wrong. It looks like the NFL really likes the Bears.
Well, I think that when you look at not only the statistics of that defense, but the way it dominated and won games, it was one of the most impressive defenses we've seen in the last 5-10 years. Those 37 takeaways, that's the big deal. You know, that's where the focus is. And it's kind of like, you know, when you look at the schedule and you say, hey, this is tough. You know, they could be a better team and only win 9 or 10 games. When you look at great defenses and they keep you, you know, they hold you down to rushing and this and that. And, you know, but when they take the ball away the way the Bears did, that's what everybody wants. That's great theater. That's good television. And that's why they got basically 6 primetime games if you count Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I do. And Hub, I know, or at least we've always been told that there's horse trading when it comes to this schedule. You know, we got to keep this date open or the marathon's here and all that kind of stuff. The Bears had to do a favor for the NFL, it seemed, last year in playing 3 games in so many days like they did. Usually you get that back some. Were they not able to I mean, it seems like they weren't able to get any help on this schedule because they were so good last year, because everybody wants them to be on national television like this.
You know, Connor, I don't know if I buy that horse trading theory. I mean, it is what it is. And you got to remember, going into last year, the Bears were as low as they are high right now. I mean, nobody cared about them. That was the way the schedule fell. And nobody expected those games to be as relevant as they were. And, you know, really, I mean, this schedule doesn't have any of that. I mean, you get back-to-back Thursdays and then still get the mini-bye after the second Thursday. You know, you get the bye after the trip to London. It's a tougher schedule because you're a better team and you're playing a first place schedule. But in terms of, you know, some of the logistics of it and some of the problems it can cause, I don't find it all that unreasonable. They've only got the one Monday night game. You know, they put the others on Sunday. So, you know, it's basically that murderer's row in the middle. You know, it's coming out of the bye and then back to back to back. You get what, the Saints and the Chargers and the Eagles, and then you get the Lions, and then you get the Rams. I mean, those 5 games right in the middle are going to dictate where this team is at the end of the season.
Do you know what Matt Nagy's expectations are for this particular voluntary workout season? What's okay and what's not, and where he is on what voluntary means?
There isn't a coach in the NFL, Dan, who understands the meaning of the word voluntary. I mean, you know, they know, they get it. It's a contractual thing. But in their minds, if you're not there, you don't care enough. I don't know how I could put it any. I mean, you know, some are brighter than Tom Coughlin and don't come out and raise a stink over it. But that was one of my favorite Wani stories of all time. I think you've probably heard it. Actually, you may have been on the beat at that time. We were at the old Hallis Hall, and we're out on the field. And this was just when they were getting into this. And it was the first day of voluntary something. I can't remember if it's mini camp or, you know, they didn't have OTAs. It must have been a voluntary mini camp. And Wani comes over and he says, okay, really good day. There were only 2 unexcused absences, Kevin Butler and somebody else. Can't remember who the other one was. And I looked at him, I said, Dave, what's an unexcused absence at a voluntary practice? You know, and he kind of was flustered from it.
He's like, come on, Hub.
And that goes back 25 years. I mean, they expect these guys to be there. And more to the point, these players have to understand that if you're not there, you're falling behind, you know. And so I can't imagine Matt Nagy views it any differently than anybody else.
It's funny because we asked it of Ian Rappaport yesterday, and he answered oppositely. He said, it doesn't matter. Nobody really cares. And he used Khalil Mack as an example of somebody who didn't need an actual training camp, let alone a voluntary workout. He said that the pendulum has swung back to the point where unless you are Tom Coughlin, most of these guys get it, even if they, you know, in a private moment, obviously might want everybody there all the time.
Yeah, most of these guys have lists of who they trust and who they don't trust in terms of if they're not there, are they working out, will they be in shape? But I don't know one who doesn't want all of his guys there. It's team building. It's chemistry. It's all the things you hear about. It's not so much that they have to have their strength and conditioning people with their hands on these guys. And the other thing that is misunderstood here, they're not out practicing every day. The OTAs are really the only time they're on the field. And they're not allowed, there's restrictions on to how much coaching they can get. A lot of this is just weightlifting, and then the guys decide to go out and throw the ball around afterwards. So it shouldn't be that big a deal, but you know, guys, everybody I know, they're grinders. You know, they want as much time as they get. They want 367 days in the year, and they want them out there. And I'm sure that Matt Nagy wants all his guys there.
So to my mind, Hub, there are three likely outcomes for Josh Rosen, the Cardinals, and subsequently Kyler Murray. Josh Rosen stays, he goes before the draft, or he goes on draft day. What's the most likely outcome to you?
Well, you know, it's all about value, and his value is greatest before or on draft day. If they draft Kyler Murray and Rosen is still there, then they got a real issue because they ain't both going to be there on opening day, and or they shouldn't be anyway. That would really – the whole thing is kind of crazy, and I think what's happened is the Cardinals, from the teams I talked to, they're just finding out that, you know, Rosen's value isn't what they want it to be. You know, you've got a situation there. Steve Keim has the ear and the trust of Michael Bidwell, who is now running the football team. But last year, you traded a 15 in the first round, a third rounder, and a fifth rounder to come up and take Rosen at 10. Now, 1 year later, you're just going to throw all that away and to throw the number one overall pick on a guy who's a questionable prospect? I mean, it's a fascinating situation to watch here. And you know, the idea, what does it say about their new head coach, Cliff Kingsbury, if he needs a specialist to run his offense? Yeah, I mean, Kyler Murray's the only guy who can run the air raid offense. Why can't Josh Rosen, you know, run it? It's not about a running quarterback. Murray is a great athlete, you know, and he can run. So much of this makes so little sense, you know. And so if you're a team that's going to trade for Josh Rosen, you're saying to yourself, okay, we knew there were questions about the kid last year. Now it's a year later, and the team that took him can't wait to get rid of him. And so if they want Kyler Murray, they're going to have to bite the bullet on Josh Rosen. You're not going to give him away. You know, some will probably give you a third-round pick, you know, maybe a 2 and a 3, something like that, if they want him bad enough. But that's the other issue. You've got this kid with – and I don't know that he's a bad kid. I'm not saying he's got, you know, personality problems or issues, but the report has been that he's tough to be around. And so how much do you want to give up to bring that into your locker room with all the uncertainty? Plus, he didn't play all that well. Now, that part of it's not fair because, you know, rookie quarterbacks, especially on awful teams with a head coach who only lasted a year, you can't expect him to do much, but he didn't. And so they have really terribly diminished Rosen's value in this process, maybe accidentally. And I think that's probably causing part of the problem for him.
Back to the Bears for a second with Matt Nagy going into what he views as, what do you call the 200 level courses now that he started out. He used the analogy of being the intro courses in college. Is there a danger of accelerating too quickly? Is there a danger of assuming that's like, okay, got 1 year in, here's all of it now, here's everything? Do they still have to be mindful of the speed at which they are layering in some of what he wants to do?
Well, I think there's a plan, but I don't think there's a danger. I mean, it's not like they're going to add a ton more to the playbook. The playbook's all been there. They only focused on being really great at some of it and using that more and keeping some of it in their back pocket. But this also gets back to your question about wanting these guys in there. I mean, you know, this is, again, it's time to work on that playbook. Look at film, whiteboard time. It's legal practice time. They're not allowed to even talk to them from the end of the league year until this past Monday. And so that's another reason that they want them there so much. And then, you know, they start to expand on it and they figure out what guys can handle and what they can't handle. And, you know, in the case of Matt, it's just that his playbook, you know, because he has so much fun with it, and that's not why he does it. He does it because he wants to win. But because he's got so much of this extra trickeration, if you will, you got to figure out how much you want them focusing on at one time. But no, I think the first year is the real issue, is how far can you bring them, how quickly, and the second year is where you really, you know, kind of become specialists with certain stuff, and then you add some pieces, hopefully, that other teams aren't doing. It's very much, I think the transition that Bears fans and people watching the Bears are looking for is exactly what you saw with the Rams last year, where they came out of nowhere in 17. The offense, nobody could believe what Sean McVay did, and the following year, it's not that the stats got that much better, but in key situations and winning football games, they had more offense, were able to make more plays, got the drive to tie the game in New Orleans after the missed call. You know, and those are the things that you're focused on now, is how much better can you get at what you were already doing, not that they're going to add that much more.
Read something from Matt Nagy that mentioned that he'd like to have Mitchell Trubisky just kind of call a series or just kind of run it on his own, maybe in OTAs, maybe even at camp. I wonder what the end goal is for that, because you mentioned the trickeration, the level of offense that Matt Nagy calls things at. It would be difficult in-game for Mitch to call his own plays, because in Nagy's offense, you're shuttling so much personnel in and out, aren't you? I mean, I'm sure the goal of this is just make sure that Mitch has done the work and is comfortable in the offense, but is there a real live game application for something like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, anytime you're in no huddle or hurry up, I mean, you know, you can try talking to him on that headset, but especially if you're in hurry up, you don't have 15 seconds or 20 seconds to wait for the play. You know, you throw a play, you get to the line, you throw the next one. And so that's the idea, is to make him as comfortable with A, the whole playbook, and B, you know, calling plays at any time that he has to. It's even a question of, you know, sometimes when they give you two plays and a check with me, you know, and getting him more comfortable with which one's going to make more sense. And so all the great ones do it. You know, I mean, towards the end of their careers, now with Brady, with Manning, you know, they could call the whole game if you wanted them to. Aaron Rodgers apparently was calling the whole game, you know. So it makes perfect sense that for a young quarterback, you want to bring him along slowly, but it's one more thing you'd like him to be able to do.
Are you hearing anything notable about the Bears' approach to the draft outside of what we've already heard and knowing where they're picking and where they're not?
No, I mean, nobody's really focused on them right now because they started 87. I know there's a couple teams that they've talked to get a feel for where each other are at, you know, and, you know, you're always going to do that. I think from a fan and a media perspective, you know, what they say about those of us who fail to learn from history, Ryan has made a pretty big trade almost every year since he's been here in the draft, you know, and so I'm hard pressed to see him standing pat at 87, but I don't think he's going to start unloading a number of next year's picks, you know, to come up and do something dramatic. I could see them maybe getting higher in the third round, maybe getting into the back of the second round by using one of those twos this year on the same theory they used last year, you know, that they got Anthony Miller a year sooner, because they do have a couple extra later round picks, and they will get a couple compensatory picks, probably late ones, maybe a six or a seven, but you know, Amos and Callahan are going to be worth something to him next year. So, you know, maybe moving up into the back of the second round, higher in the third round, but unlikely you'd see anything more than that.
You're going to be very, very busy with the Scores draft coverage. Thursday, April 25th, it's you and Pompey, Manley, Greg Gabriel live in the Score studios, Mark Grody at Hallis Hall from 6 to 10 p.m., and then we have multi-generational Arkush talent with Julie DeCaro and Arthur Arkush from 10 to midnight. Friday, Joe O in the Score studio from 6 to 8:05 p.m. Saturday, Joniak, Thayer, Haw, Hub, Pompey at Soldier Field from 10 to 3.
God.
That's on the 27th. Mark Grody live from Hallis, Julie and Maggie with Greg Gabriel from 3 to 6:35. Wall-to-wall stuff. And Hub, I know you're right in the middle of all of it.
It's fun, guys. I mean, this is not that the season isn't and the games aren't. They are. But this is kind of a unique holiday, as you mentioned at the top. And we know fans are into it. So hopefully everybody will enjoy it. And we'll have the best coverage for it.
All right. Speaking of holidays, have a great Passover, Hub.
Same to you guys. Take care.
Thank you. This segment brought to you by Chicagoland Papa John's. Chicagoland Papa John's is offering free pizza this weekend. Buy one pizza at regular price. Get a second pizza of equal or less value for free. Use promo code FREEPIZZADAY on the Papa John's app or online at papajohns.com. That's promo code FREEPIZZADAY.
The Midday Midway is on the way. I have a newly appointed state amphibian that will gross you out.
Not
also,
necessarily. I like amphibians.
Do you? Well, no, this one's pretty gross. We've also got a story of a major leaguer who's made good on a minor league promise.
Okay. I have a huge fish that was dragged onto a boat after an unbelievable fight. I have a bad day for a Connecticut golfer and a discovery of something really cool in Indiana.
The Midday Midway is on the way. It's the Bernstein McKnight Show, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Already doing a lot in the first half of this Good Friday show here for Bernstein and McKnight. We talked a little bit of baseball regarding the Peter Gammons comments about whether or not Theo Epstein is happy with Joe Maddon's flexible defensive lineups and moving everybody around. It would make sense that this is kind of the plan. They've always been upfront about liking their versatility, so I'm not sure what would be causing any tension. We have the data about AAA now using Major League Baseballs and how these Major League Baseballs are flying through the air in AAA just as they do in the big leagues.
It's the home run game.
Completely skewing all of the home run numbers when compared to everywhere else across the minors. Hub talked football with us, and we mentioned our odd co-worker Shane and his military-grade cucumber knife.
So I found this story the other day and really enjoyed it. I told you last year how much I really liked that Brewers Club. It was a very entertaining one, save Ryan Braun. I liked the way they went about their offseason and adding a bunch of pieces where not many others did, as frustrating as it was to watch them take an NL Central. Still, this story is great. Jeremy Jeffress just came back for the Brewers. He pitched, like two-thirds of an inning, something like that. He's going to be big for the bullpen, but also big for the Brewers' concessions, I guess. You know how minor leaguers, like just as you're kind of getting scouted and signed and stuff, you've got that kind of group around you where you're like, oh, if I ever make it to the bigs, you're getting this and we're doing this and I'm going to buy all that kind of stuff. You know, the promises you make to those on your way up. Jeremy Jeffress made a promise to an old friend of his who ran outside of one of the minor league parks he played in South Boston.
Oh, is this the seafood restaurant?
At the Halifax County Fair. Yeah, it was the local seafood place just outside the ballpark was Breedlove's. And Jeffress would go to the ballpark. You know, this is where he just kind of started coming up as a high schooler in a Babe Ruth, I guess, or whatever they've got out there. And that was kind of the smell of the ballpark for him. Like for me, like I ran cross country all through high school, and you smell that fresh cut grass, and it's like David Haw thinks of football. I think of track and field, whatever.
Soccer practice.
Oh, you just kind of want it. You hate it. But yeah. This Jeremy Jeffress smelled that kind of that fish, that like fried fish sort of thing, and that was a big ballpark sensory deal for him.
You said South Carolina?
Yeah. Okay. Halifax County Fair is where it was.
No, I don't know exactly where that is.
No, South Boston is where Breedlove's is.
Okay.
So out east like that. And it's actually a small town in Virginia called South Boston. So it's out east that way.
Virginia.
I don't know it at all. Or?
I don't, because I'm just trying to figure out the style of seafood. Because as you know from spending time in Myrtle Beach, mm-hmm. that in South Carolina there's what they call calabash-style seafood, which is a lot of like the fried oysters and rock shrimp
that's
and stuff.
Really
and
stuff.
Oyster po' boys.
This seems a little different. Yeah. Anyway, he found got friends with the son of the guy who owned Breedlove's and told him that, you know, I ever make it to the show and we're going to do something together. It's paying off. Jeffress bought a food truck. He's going to set it up outside the ballpark and around Milwaukee, the actual city of Milwaukee. It's opening later this month. It's JJ's Bread and Butter, and it's all because Jeremy Jeffress wanted to smell that smell when he got to the ballpark. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, he's like the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company here. Good for him. Speaking of seafood, here's a lot of it. A Florida fishing boat captain has earned major bragging rights after snagging a swordfish that could be the new state record. When you think Florida state record swordfish,
he's going to be a big one.
Captain Nick Stanzik was fishing with friends off the coast of Islamorada in the Florida Keys, and in a Facebook post, he said after 10 minutes on the water, he got a bite on his line. He said, after 40 minutes, we got the fish back on the wind-on leader. I could see an electric blue swordfish swimming down deep. I told him it was big. Wasn't sure how big. I said it could be 400-plus, but I didn't get a great look. Guess how long it took to boat the fish?
Hours, I assume?
8 hours.
Wow.
It took an 8-hour struggle with the fish before they reeled it in. He said it took the three of us to pull her over the side. The rope crackled. The tower creaked. She came in 1 inch at a time. They had to winch it up on the tower. So finally, she hit the deck, and she was ours. It took 7 people to haul the fish off the boat. It checked in at 757 pounds. An 8-hour fight with a 757-pound swordfish. And the good thing is, that's the sustainable size. That they're very swordfish has been overfished, and they have to be over a certain size to be harvested. So there's no downside to this story. This is a
they get to sell. It's all good.
This is a harvestable, completely edible, like the whole food, sustainable stamped fish.
We've got a recall here, and it may affect the fats, so I wanted to, as a public service, I want to let everybody know, Chewy Chips Ahoy cookies have been recalled.
I bought a pack yesterday.
Due to a mystery. This from the takeout. Apparently, it's Mondelez, right? That's the company Mondelez that runs Brands. Chips Ahoy and Nabisco and all that kind of stuff. So they've called back certain packages of Chewy Chips Ahoy. Are you guys in on Chewy Chips Ahoy? Are they pretty high in the fat power rankings then?
It's a cookie.
Come on. Wasting airtime with that question.
So apparently there is an unexpected solidified ingredient within the cookies.
A bad one? Or?
The folks at the takeout did some call around to the hotline, the Nabisco hotline, and apparently what it's solidified. It's cornstarch that's just kind of solidified into a thing.
Oh.
It's fine. You're good. It's all fine. It's all good. I'm glad to know that, but I wanted to let people know that if you're going through your Chewy Chips Ahoy, the fine folks at Nabisco have let everybody know that this is, watch out for this sort of thing.
My kid ate like 8 of them last night.
That's kind of why I brought it up, too, is I don't know anyone who enjoys Chewy Chips Ahoy and eats fewer than like 3 dozen in a sitting. These are the kinds of things you just whip through in quantity.
Yeah, I will say, though, if you live around here, you probably know of a chewy chocolate chip cookie that was ahead of its time called Matt's.
Matt's.
MATT'S, where Matt's cookies, they were ahead of the game when it came to whatever the sugar is that remains chewy.
The plaid bag.
It comes in a bag. Yeah. I think it's still a local company. And that was always the stuff. I remember being at a friend's house one time and having one. I'm like, what is this? I'm like, oh, Matt's cookies. I'm like, okay, Mom!
We're getting
please
these
get
now.
These.
We want them.
Yep. A golfer and a horse, and the horse that rode in on him, are recovering after being injured in separate bobcat attacks in Connecticut yesterday morning. This happened in Baltic, a small town close to the Rhode Island state line. The golfer was at the Mohegan Sun Golf Course, the horse at a home nearby. The golfer in his late 60s was near the 7th hole when he was attacked. The bobcat jumped on his back. He was able to fight it off with a golf club. According to the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, Officer Chris Dwyer said he thought it was dead. As he walked a few steps away, it ended up jumping back up on him and taking off on him. It's a false dawn.
Oh, my God.
At the end of Die Hard, another member of the golfer's team was able to drive the bobcat off. The attacked golfer was transported to a hospital for treatment of lacerations. His condition is unknown. The horse suffered lacerations to the neck and eye, being treated by a veterinarian. The horse received 16 stitches and some booster shots, is expected to be fine. The department tracked down and captured a bobcat on the golf course. The animal was euthanized and is being tested for rabies.
But we don't know if it's that bobcat? I mean, it doesn't say we got him. It doesn't say mission accomplished on a banner across a battleship or anything. They don't know if they got him or not.
They cut open the shark and find the license plate.
Do we know?
We don't know. It so happens they did capture a bobcat, but we don't know if it's
watched a lot of sci-fi movies, man. Yep. It doesn't sound like they got the right bobcat. This from NPR. The headline got me to click. Snot otter emerges victorious in vote for Pennsylvania's official amphibian. They have found it. They have voted for it. The people of Pennsylvania, they wanted to name. Yeah, there are other names. It's got its fair share of nicknames, in fact. A snot otter, a mud devil, an Allegheny alligator, a devil dog, a lasagna lizard, and a hellbender.
I mean,
it's all of those things are great, but apparently they wanted it to be the snot otter. The State House of Representatives voted 191-6 on the bill, so it is the official state amphibian of Philadelphia. There's an accompanying video and a whole bunch of photos. The thing is absolutely disgusting. It looks like it's made of snot. It's actually a salamander. It's not an otter, and it's not actually made of snot, nor is it made of hell or bending it. But it is absolutely gross.
There was a fishing lure called a hellbender that was designed after this, and I don't know for guy. I think it was a bass lure, but it was a Hedden or Rebel. Dale Bowman can help us, but there was a lure called a hellbender that was designed to mimic the swimming movements of this in areas where fish fed on it.
The hellbender is a nocturnal salamander that grows more than 2 feet long. The mud-colored creature, covered in a layer of mucus, breathes primarily through loose flaps of skin, wrinkled skin.
It's like Rick.
That look a bit like lasagna noodles. That's harsh.
Yeah, it was the Hedden Magnum Hellbender. They still make it. Here it is. It's $10 on Amazon. You can still get yourself one.
Well, this thing is gross. Absolutely disgusting.
In Seymour, Indiana, that's down south. That's down close to Louisville, rural Indiana. In Seymour, there was some
Seymour down there.
Seymour,
probably.
You don't know that. You're just thinking it.
Think how far south you gotta go.
I know. There were workers with Atlas Excavating who were digging on property owned by Joe Shepman. They were installing sewer lines as part of a $15.5 million project. And guess what they found? I would like to sing this to the tune of Basketball Jones because they found mastodon bones.
Mastodon bones.
Yes.
In Seymour?
Yes. Yeah. The Shepman owns the property with his sister Sue and her husband Tony and their aunt and uncle. They were unearthed on an easement for the sewer line. The remains include the majority of a tusk, part of a jawbone with teeth, two upper leg bones, a vertebra, a joint, and part of the skull. The tusks were 9 feet long. The mastodon was a male, estimated between 40 and 50 years old when it died. It died between 10,000 and 13,000 years ago and weighed 12,000 pounds. These aren't little teeny tiny foot bones or, you know, ear bones. I mean, massive teeth. And they had experts come out from the Indiana State Museum. And apparently this happens. There are one or two discoveries each year in Indiana, not as common in the southern part of the state, but it is unique to find this many bones from the same animal in the area, and most of the discoveries are made during construction projects, but this kind of thing happens. And now they have to go through a process where they to be accepted as part of museum inventory. They have to go through a committee, but there were large, large things roaming around Indiana that are being discovered.
That is the Midday Midway.
That's
a microphone. It's got a button and everything. That's the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Got a lot to do before we get out of here. Jonah Carey at 11. But when we come back, there's been another poll of Major League Baseball players.
Okay.
This one's a funny one. Sometimes people come up to you when you're a baseball player. They ask, what do you do?
Yes.
Sometimes you're not interested in telling them that you're a ball player because you just want to get about your day. The lies they tell are pretty good ones.
I'm Edward Dickman.
We will We'll tell you what they are when we come back.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats playoff hockey in Chicago. Catch the Central Division champion Chicago Wolves as they battle Grand Rapids in the first round tonight and Saturday at 7 at Allstate Arena. For playoff information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. The made-up avocations of Major League Baseball players. Next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This segment is brought to you by the Chicago Dogs. Baseball, hot dogs, fireworks, it's baseball with everything. Tickets now on sale for the Chicago Dogs, your premier minor league baseball team, opening day May 17th. Fans will receive an iconic hot dog costume and set a world record for the largest pack of wieners in one location. Purchase tickets at thechicagodogs.com. And we mentioned before, we heard Carlos Zambrano, who's going to be pitching for the Chicago Dogs, and he has, when he described what he liked on his dog, it turns out that is a very typical Venezuelan hot dog.
Yeah, thanks to texters for pointing that out. I had no idea. I've seen hot dogs that look something like that, but they look delicious.
Yeah, we're going to make that.
Onions and corn, right? You figure you do that in some sort of like a
don't give it away.
Like
we've got a plan to do this for a leftover.
That's a fair point. It'd be a good video. Yeah. It looks like a good hot dog too. Speaking of baseball, we have seen a pretty funny article. Eddie Matz wrote this for the Mothership, and I thought it was pretty great. There's interviews with a bunch of different players who were asked how they lie to people when folks ask what they do. You know, if you don't want to say, I'm a ball player, I play for the Yankees or something like that, because you just don't want to get into the conversation, they've made up professions. Guys like Zach Britton and Justin Upton and JT Realmuto and Patrick Corbin, they've all got answers for them. Some of them are funnier than others. Most are pretty great. This one from Realmuto it feels pretty real. He was asked, how do you lie? What do you say to folks that you want to talk to? Says, the latest one I used was after I got a scratch on my nose sliding into home plate. Nice little wound. A couple of days later, somebody asked me what I do for a living. I said I was an amateur boxer. Nothing big, just kind of a small name guy. He bought it, but I didn't have to go too far into detail because once I said I was a small-time amateur, he didn't really care. If people really are fans of baseball, you can tell the ones you don't want to have a conversation with. And this guy was one of the people I didn't feel like talking to for 3 hours about baseball. If they're not a fan, they'll just say, cool, you play baseball, big deal. But if it's a huge baseball fan, they'll start asking all types of questions. Sometimes you just want out of the conversation, you know? Sometimes you're not interested in being part of what's going to happen.
We get it with the radio nerds, the people who love radio, love the history of radio, and ask all these questions. I'm like, look, you listen to way more radio than I do. I don't know who you're talking about. I don't really have a thought. I don't know. Thanks for listening. You know,
Zach Britton of the Yankees says he was out with his cousin one time, got to talking to some people, and inevitably somebody asked what he do. Just didn't feel like bringing up the whole baseball thing. So my cousin tells him that we were football pylon manufacturers. First, the guy was like, what's that? There happened to be a football game on. So we're like, see the thing at the goal line? Those are pylons. He's like, what? That's a business? There can't be that much to know about manufacturing football pylons, right? So we just kind of rolled with it, and the guy lost interest immediately. It's not a conversation starter. It's an ender, and that's kind of the whole point. Chris Davis from the Oakland A's.
Just got a big extension.
Who hits 247 every single year. I tell them I work at Foot Locker. I wouldn't pick a profession I don't know anything about. I know a little something about shoes. Usually if I use that story, I'm on vacation somewhere. I don't want to be known. No one really cares about a shoe salesman, so the conversation didn't last long. The same could be said about being an Oakland A. No one really cares.
See, I think you have to be a little more ambitious with some of this stuff and pick a profession where you would have to really – like I'm a test pilot.
Perhaps you'll like Kevin Gausman's explanation. Okay. Kevin, who, by the way, I told you to put some money on as a dark horse NL Cy Young candidate, 19 and two-thirds innings for the Atlanta Braves, a .76 whip, a FIP that looks real tidy at 3.1. Guy's pitching fairly well. I like talented Orioles who are no longer Orioles. It's usually a big win. Kevin Gausman says this. I'm a blimp folder.
Oh, God.
I just fly around with a pilot and make sure to type in the right thing. Sometimes we'll have football games and you have to go type in Go Patriots or there's free Bud Light after the game. And then we land and then we deflate the blimp and I start folding. It takes a long time, usually a couple of hours, but I try to get it done pretty quick. people always assume that someone's telling the truth, especially when they first meet and you ask what they do. They don't think you're lying, so a lot of people go with it. They don't think of the fact that there's no way a blimp ever gets folded. I guess people just aren't that smart.
That I like.
It's a professional blimp folder.
Now, a little breaking Cubs news here. The Cubs need a starting pitcher for Sunday against the Diamondbacks. They're going to start Tyler Chatwood.
Sure.
I'll be over here throwing up.
You knew Tyler Chatwood was going to get a start at some point while John Lester was out.
I guess.
You understand that that was fate. That was going to happen.
I don't know. I don't like it.
Right, but you can't just
On Easter, isn't he rising? Is he like died for the sins so Tyler Chatwood didn't have to start?
I think he didn't say that specifically. I don't know which gospel that was.
I think that's the gospel of Phil.
Phil Spector?
Phil.
What was your name?
Phil Struthers. That's what I did in college. Whenever I had to like wingman and I didn't really want to, or I was past a point in the evening where I was going to be a solid wingman, I would go with a fake name. Phil Struthers. It was always introduced that way. Phil Struthers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just make up a backstory as you went.
It was different.
Always a different backstory. Yeah, that's what made it interesting for me. I realize that that's weird and completely narcissistic, but that's how I entertained myself when I didn't want to do anything.
But what if your partner in crime turned back to you and was part of the conversation afterward and didn't know to refer to you as Phil?
Oh, they knew.
And didn't know your backstory.
No. They knew. I'd tell them. There was an understanding. If I didn't want to be there, I'm Phil Struthers.
Okay. It's always
that. If you need a wingman here, I'm Phil Struthers.
Okay.
Now, is this like Carl Anthony Towns, or is this like a normal hyphen where it's in the last name? Are you Phil Struthers?
No,
or Phil Struthers.
No, it was like people who like Bond, James Bond, but it was first name twice instead. It was Phil, Phil Struthers.
Okay.
Phil Struthers was
and
the
you'd
whole
off,
name.
You'd offer the last name even when unasked.
Almost always. Oh. Yeah, Phil Struthers.
And this, how did this start?
I don't know. I
can't
really
do that as much now because people look you up on Facebook. They'll look up Phil Struthers like, he doesn't look anything like that.
I'm not on Facebook. I don't think Phil Struthers would have ever been on Facebook.
He's definitely already on Twitter as we speak.
Not a Phil Struthers.
Someone is creating a picture of you and a Phil Struthers account for sure.
See, this, from the 219, he says he's always Abe Froman. You can't be Abe Froman. Everybody knows that. I mean,
Sausage King of Chicago.
If you're able
right.
to pass it off, that's great. Like if you KYP, if you know the people you're out with, then maybe you're able to get away with Abe Froman. But nobody questions Phil Struthers.
No one cares.
No, and you make Phil Struthers as boring as you possibly can.
Is he a realtor?
Well, I mean, not in college. No.
Oh, okay.
No, he was like an art history major, often or something just real boring that made people go
comp lit.
Yeah, something real. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to deviate much from my actual backstory. It was fairly boring.
Isn't really a reach for you. I never had the energy. I never had the energy or the wherewithal to do it because it was too much work to try to remember who I was and what I did. And it was a small enough school
right.
where I was going to run into that person again. And we had something that was referred to as the pig book. And it was the freshman class had like a pre-yearbook where all it was everybody's picture alphabetically, you know, name, hometown, and a couple of interests, like a couple of keywords about you.
Okay.
So you'd look somebody up in the pig
everybody
book.
Everybody in the...
Everybody freshman class.
Why was it? It was a pig book?
The nickname of the thing. It was the freshman, like, ID book. It was so you could know who you were talking to. Like,
okay. Yeah.
Or, you know, who was that cute girl I was talking to at the hideaway?
It was like Facebook, but on paper.
There you go. That's exactly what it was.
It was on paper.
And everybody got one as we arrived on campus. You would submit a picture, you would fill out a little thing, and they called it the pig book. I have no idea how it got that name. I have some ideas.
Yeah, they're probably not good ways.
The problem was what would happen with that book is you would associate, if somebody had a bad picture or a strange picture, and you would associate somebody with what you thought of the picture to the real person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the rat's big and a pig.
There was this one kid who I was talking to him at a party, and my friend Rich comes up to me and he goes, "Oh, that's head on a stick." And like, what do you mean that's head
that's
on a
good.
Stick? What do you mean head on a stick? I had no idea what you're talking about. She goes, "Look him up in the pig book." And I look him up, and his skin tone and his outfit was such, he was wearing a bright white shirt against a bright white background, and he had a dark tie and relatively dark skin, so his shirt blended into the background, and that's why Rich gave him the nickname, and he had on a stick.
Head on a stick.
Right. And it's also how we got started with a guy, in the, I kid you not, freshman year. This guy was almost completely bald, except for like wispy hair on the sides.
Oh, yeah, the
like
Caesar thing going on.
Yeah, like a Caesar thing, but like kind of longish, like gross looking.
Like the guy from Diamonds Are Forever. No, like
yeah,
that thing.
A little bit, but he looked more like the bad guy from Men in Black 2, who's Ooh. Floating at the end. And he wore these huge glasses and a big nose, huge glasses.
Sounds
and
like his, a member of Steely Dan and or
his,
something.
And his name was Paul Newman. So I don't know. Why don't you ask Paul Newman over there?
Paul Newman's here? Right. Boy, oh, well, this is a massive disappointment. Right.
Well, you're a regular Paul Newman, aren't you?
There are some fantastic... Apparently, I'm not the only person who used fake names back in college to introduce myself. Chip McTavish is from the 646. Chris Johnstone. From Coldwater, Michigan. I have family there. That is a boring place. You could be forgotten there.
Of course.
Ray Finkel. You got to know. Well, Ray Finkel's the kicker in
yeah, from
Ace Ventura.
Right. That
so you know, you know Ray Finkel.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats playoff hockey in Chicago. Catch the Central Division champion Chicago Wolves as they battle Grand Rapids in the first round tonight and Saturday at 7 at Allstate Arena. For playoff information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Let's talk some baseball with Jonah Carey. He's
Sounds
coming
like a plan.
Up next. Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.